Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome. Pre-draft press conference. I thought we'd start off just talking about the current team and where we are after free agency and where we stand at this point. We went into the offseason, you know, with really a specific plan in mind, and I think to a large degree that plan unfolded as we both expected it to, and we were happy with the way it did. Getting the extensions done with Heath Miller and Troy Polamalu, being able to secure Jason Worlds for at least another year, having Ike Taylor be able to return, and keeping Will Allen, Greg Warren, Michael Palmer, Guy Wimper, Cody Wallace, and then exercising the option on Cameron Hayward were all things that we wanted to be able to accomplish to start off free agency. And then to be able to add from the outside, as we did with Mike Mitchell, LeGarrette Blount, Lance Moore, Cam Thomas, Arthur Motes, Bryce McCain, Darius Hayward-Bey, and Adam Podlish, the punter, we felt that the free agency probably went as good as we could have hoped. You know, we didn't anticipate having all the extra room that we were happy to get when free agency started. And that helped us to be able to accomplish those types of things. Getting to the draft, Coach, you have anything on the current group?
No, nothing to add.
All right. Moving into the draft prep, you know, I was quoted at the Combine as saying this is the best group that I've seen in my 30 years in doing this, and I still believe that. We lost a few guys along the way, maybe with some character issues, some medical issues, or just a reevaluation or a closer look, but I think we probably gained just as many guys on the flip side of that, with guys, their character may have been a little bit better than we thought, or their medical may have checked out, or maybe we had under-evaluated. So really, this draft is still very strong in our opinion. And I say that based on, we are picking at 15, and the player that's going to be available to us at 15 in years past, you may have had to been picking at 7 or maybe 8 to get the same quality of player. There's easily 15 players available that we'll be very happy with if we're able to pick them. And I think you could go and say there's probably at least 19 that you could say you'd be happy to get at pick number 15, which is, it's unique. So I think that trickles down through the rounds. I think, you know, in round two, we're getting a guy that maybe we would have had to take in round one before, 3-2, 4-3, and so on and so forth. So it is deep. We're excited about it. Just to kind of go through the positions, the running backs, we think it's a deep group. The quarterbacks, you know, it may lack a marquee guy, it may not. I think if you pulled all 32 teams, they probably have those quarterbacks rated differently. But there's certainly starters that are Pro Bowl capable in that group, and it'll be interesting to see how they unfold. The receivers, we think it's a great position, and they come in all shapes and sizes, big, small, return capable. It's really a great group. Interior offensive linemen, the depth probably is not as good as it has been. It never usually is, but the quality is probably better than it's been. The tackles are a really good group. The safeties are kind of like the interior offensive linemen. Not necessarily deep, but the quality is good. Corners are solid. The outside linebackers are very good. Middle backers are like the safeties, not deep, but good quality. And the defensive line, when you put together the 3-4 and the 4-3 capable guys, which we have to do because there's 32 teams picking these guys, it's a deep group as well. So we're still excited about that depth. There's going to be a lot of good players. Not only we hope to add to our team, but they're going to be added to our competition as well. So we better come up with some good guys. As far as a trade up or trade down, we won't be trading up because we can't. We traded away last year's third round pick, and in order to move up in the first round, you usually would have to include that in the package. We have a supplemental pick in the third round, but you can't trade those. So there won't be any movement up on our part. I can say that pretty sure. Obviously, we still could trade down, and with the depth of this draft, that's a real possibility, or at least it's an option that's available to us. If we stay where we are, there's probably a few positions that are off the table, but if we traded back, there would be no position that would be off the table because, again, it's a special group of players. The one thing I would like to mention, you know, some of you may have read or even talked about, this is the 40th anniversary of the 1974 draft that the Steelers had, and it is by far the greatest draft in NFL history. And, you know, our hats are off to Art Jr. and to Dick Haley and to Bill Nunn as well. Obviously, Coach Noll and his staff need to be applauded, and we'll certainly be thinking about that group as we get into this draft. Questions? Okay, we can go now.
Kevin, since you took an outside linebacker in the first round last year, would you be less inclined to take one this year?
Not if they're great players.
Kevin, in the offseason, some of these guys who left, Al Woods, Jonathan Dwyer, Jericho Cotchery, the process, we were a little bit into the process when these things happened. And what's the thought process on your end of the proactive, reactive thing? Did you have to wait until these guys left to make the moves to sign the guys who essentially were their replacements, or did you have them targeted? How did you go about that?
You go into it with a plan. We'd like to be able to keep a wide receiver. We'd like to be able to keep a running back. And if we don't, well, then who are our options on the outside? So you monitor where the various markets are, where the various interests of each individual player would be. And as, you know, as players either wanted to move on or their contracts became such that we couldn't handle that contract, we had to be able and ready to make a move. And we felt good about the people, not that we lost, but the people that we signed as their replacements.
Mike, did anything happen in free agency with any of the people you brought in, assigned, change your approach or your thought process coming into the draft?
No, I think that's to be determined as we get a sense of what and who they are as football players. You know, one of the things I always ask guys when I bring them in on trips is I ask them if they have any hidden talents that are not evident on tape. And they always laugh, but that is a legitimate question. And I think that question and questions like that are answered along the way as we get to know them and work with them. And obviously our plan will be able to be adjusted and play to the strengths of the men that we're working with, even maybe some unknown strengths that we're not aware of right now.
Wait and see mode on Cam Thomas, just playing at different spots to see where he's best? Or
certainly. You know, obviously he's nose capable, he's incapable. It's about not only playing to his talents, but also the talents of the other men that we have to find the strongest combination that'll give us an opportunity to play great defense. And it may change from situation to situation. I think his position flexibility will aid in that, along with the flexibility of guys like Steve and others.
Where is Steve right now? Has he proven he can play nose?
Yes, he has.
That doesn't need to be determined, so you're just looking for
the best combination of men under certain circumstances that make us a strong front.
If you've got to line up with McClendon and nose tackle, you're comfortable.
Certainly.
Is McClendon an option to play in sub packages this year?
He is.
Hey, Mike, with so much emphasis on sub package football last year, does it change the type of defensive lineman maybe you need, maybe more of a hybrid, a guy could play inside and outside because you're in sub so much?
It does, and not only that, but it highlights some of the skills of certain men. I think that there's a premium on pass rush capabilities and probably interior pass rush capabilities. Probably a stronger case for that than it's been in other years, simply because of the number of snaps that we're playing in sub-package football. And by sub-package football, I mean the offense has three or more receivers on the field. We have three or more corner-like bodies on the field.
Kevin, how do you weigh, when you look at when you start ranking guys, a position is very deep, and you get your pick and you say, okay, I got these three guys, but I can get a receiver or a cornerback or whatever later in the draft who we feel might be nearly as good as this player, but not quite as good. But I don't know if I can get, say, an offensive lineman of this value later in the draft?
It depends on who the player is you're looking at versus the depth position where you might be able to get other players later. You can never pass up a quality player with hope that you're going to get someone else in the sixth round. I mean, you better take the player you like and have a real good feel for when you have the opportunity to take them. Conversely, don't just take the guy because it's a little – there's less players – there's a less number of players below him, because then you're artificially valuing that player just because of the scarcity of his position. So when you take a player at a certain round, he should be of the value that you want to take. And if you really like him, you better take him, because that quality – even though the quantity's there, the quality of that same player might not be there later on.
Kevin, when you traded up, you've done so with a player in mind, right? When you've traded back, did you also do it with that? Like when you took Casey Hampton, did you kind of know you could get Casey at that point? And well, is that what drives when you go back? Is it the value you get, or is it you're looking for a player that you can get down there?
It's both. You want to see... When you trade up, sure, you have a specific guy in mind. When you trade back, you want to see how many places you can go back, what you're going to get in return, and whether the odds that I'm going to get that player or that group of players. So if we trade back three spots, very rarely will you do it without three people you would take. You want to be in a no-lose situation. Could you roll the dice and go 67%? Sure. But... as a general rule, you never want to trade yourself away from a specific group of players.
Kevin, along with someone along those lines, is getting that third-round pick a carrot to that type of thinking, trying to get that back? I mean, ideally, you would like to get that third-round pick. Is that a...
Well, last year when we traded for the pick to take Shamarco Thomas, we did it with the thought that we would get the supplemental pick, or the compensatory pick, I guess I should say, that we were going to get. Now, it's lower than where we would have been, but when we did that, we knew we were very comfortable we were going to get a third-round pick back. So if the situation presents itself or we can get more picks in this draft, I think the more the merrier, without question.
Kevin, do you think it'll be more difficult to trade down in the first round because of the depth, because a lot of teams might be trying to do the same thing?
It depends on what certain teams are looking for. I think the quarterbacks are the linchpin in this whole thing and how teams value them. And as I said earlier, I think if you pulled all 32 teams, they probably have a quarterbacks rated differently, because I think there's different likes and dislikes for each player that each organization probably has. So it depends. I think that's the one thing that could really trigger the trade up or trade down, because in all honesty, there's a lot of depth at the other positions and it might preclude teams from trading up.
Do you use the trade value chart when making trades?
We don't use it for our own purposes. We do it to try to see what the other team is thinking. We won't ever make a trade based on the chart. If we want a player, we'll go and get that player. You know, we always talk about trading up. We did it with Troy. It was a 3 and a 6. When we did it with Santonio, it was a 3 and a 4. And people will argue, well, you gave up too much. And I'll argue, how much is the Super Bowl worth? So when you want to make that pick or you want to make that trade, you do it on what you want to do. But you have to know what the other person's thinking when they say, well, my chart doesn't allow this. So we have to know what they're thinking. And they'll throw it on us. But if we want to do it, we'll do it, and we won't follow a chart.
That chart is outdated with the new CBA. I mean, the amount of money at the top of the draft is completely different in terms of what the costs are.
I don't know if it's outdated or not, because I don't quite understand how that. You know, if someone came up with a mathematical equation that you got to get this much for this, and I don't follow that, because if we really want that player and I'm willing to give up a 3 and a 4 to do it, then that's on us, because, you know, we gave up more than the chart said to do. So be it if it works.
And look, just as a hypothetical, you're looking at cornerbacks, and you have guys who are in college, the scheme that they play a lot of press, play on top of the receiver, versus guys who play off the ball. when you're looking at things like that and doing the evaluation, how much of it is, look, we play our style, we're not worried about guys fitting in the scheme, we can teach them the skill set if they have the basic athletic ability, and how much is it, you know, for instance, Denard and Gilbert play a lot of press and Fuller maybe play more off. How much does that influence how you put your board together?
You always know what your defense is going to ask of a player, and you want to see those players be able to do something like that. If they play a bunch of press and they don't play a lot of off or they don't play a lot of zone, then you're guessing as to whether they can, and that's where you just have to look at basics of size, athleticism, awareness, instinct, ball skills. You try to weigh all that and say, even though he doesn't do it, he could do it. If a guy doesn't play a bunch of man-to-man, you want to just see what, again, the same skill set. Can he do what we're going to ask him to do? And it's just an educated guess.
And I think that's part of the draft evaluation process. Kevin talked about the talent in this draft. It doesn't necessarily mean that these guys are ready-made players at the positions you draft them. I think it means they have high pedigree along with upside. You know, we talked about the scarcity in the interior line positions. The reality is that most colleges play their best players at tackle. So there will be a lot of guys listed as tackle on draft boards that are going to get drafted as interior offensive linemen for the NFL. Same thing could be said for the safety position. We talked about the safety position maybe not being as deep. Well, there's certain guys in certain universities that are playing corner that have NFL safety futures. So they're going to use the guys in a manner that help them win. It's our job to evaluate the pedigree along with the upside and maybe quantify the learning curve if it constitutes a position change or a strong technique change relative to schematics. That goes across the board as we look at all of these guys or most of these guys.
Do you get a chance to do that primarily at the bowl games? I mean, the combine, not as much, or is there really a chance to evaluate that?
It is. It's just, you know, that's what pro day workouts and combine workouts are about. It's about the opportunity to look at them in shorts and evaluate their overall pedigree or level of athleticism, body control, and what have you. And place a value on that along with upside and learning and things that you do in terms of being able to forecast where they might go.
Mike, where's Sean Spence going into your offseason here?
He's healthy and working, so we can't wait, obviously, to watch him take the next step in this process, obviously, which is play football.
You guys have starting from scratch, basically, in terms of finding out what he can do?
I don't think that we're starting from scratch. These hadn't been empty days for him since he's been here with the rehabilitation process and what he's been able to do in terms of learning our system of football. I'm not going to assume that he's starting from ground zero, no.
Where's he starting? I guess what's the level of confidence that he could be a major player for you?
You know, I think that's to be determined with how he performs and plays, but he's been given a clean bill of health, and we'll go from there.
Is his knee, Mike, back to where it was before the injury?
I don't know the answer to that. I don't think you could know the answer to that to anybody that sustains a knee injury until they move on and play football.
How about Nick Williams? Where is he?
Same could be said for Nick. Nick has positive reviews in terms of his rehabilitation, and we'll see where it takes us once we get him on the grass.
Where do you stand with Brett Kiesel? And depending on how things go with the draft, is there a chance he'd rejoin you for camp?
You know, the door is not closed to anybody that's on the market as a free agent. I think at this point we're singularly focused on the draft and what this weekend holds, and then we'll gather and ponder those possibilities in the aftermath.
Kevin, you talked about all the players across the board, but like especially a cornerback and wide receiver. When you guys are doing your internal grading, did that make it difficult to create separation in your own mind about these guys because there are so many guys, especially at the top of these classes, that are really good?
It created a lot of interesting and exciting discussion, and we had to spend more time on the receivers and the corners, especially the receivers, because there was so many, and we kept looking at ourselves and say, this is really great. We have some nice options available to us that in years past we haven't. And those, you know, it was a lot of discussions about the big guys versus the small guys, the return capable guys, and even guys that show up on special teams coverage units, because that may be how they have to come in and start. So we took a lot of time really sorting through the receivers, and that was a good read. It never got boring because there was a lot of exciting players, and that's that we entered it thinking that, and we came away for sure, and the corners weren't far behind it.
Yeah, if you look at, you know, it makes for an interesting evaluation and discussion. The work is so specialized now in college football. You've got big wideouts, you've got small wideouts, you got guys that play exclusively in the slot, you got guys that play exclusively outside, you even got guys that play on the left side exclusively on offense or the right side exclusively on offense. So it generated a lot of opportunity for discussion and forecasting and evaluations. Obviously, it makes it a little bit more complex, but makes it an interesting process.
How did the extra 2 weeks impact? Seems like everybody's dying to get this day to come. Did it impact how you guys went about your business?
All we did, really, we didn't want to change the way we do it. Now, with the extra 2 weeks, there had to be some kind of change. And what we did is basically drag the meetings out. Instead of having a two session 10-day, you know, long weekend type deal, we broke it into smaller segments and let the scouts and the coaches have some weekends off, where in the past we had compressed it. So really we're at the same point today we have been in years past. Everybody had more weekends available this year, but we weren't going to change. We didn't want to get done too early, because I think once you get done too early, you do too much second guessing. So we took what we had available from a time standpoint and just basically spread it out. And it was more humane, especially for the coaches who are, you know, a lot of their weekends get chewed up during the season. And for our scouts, they could actually go home and come back. And it worked out very well.
He's got to go to some hockey games.
Not as many as I'd like.
And we got an opportunity to probably lay more eyes on more guys throughout the process and get out. I know I probably got to more pro days this year than I have in the past. And I think the additional time created an opportunity for more of that as well.
Yeah, because that was the, just to add the coach's point, there were a few pro days that leaked into April, and we were able to go to those because we had the extra time. So we did get to more than we had previously.
Yeah, but you said you crossed some guys off for character issues because you do every year. Was it any more or less this year, and were some of them top-tier guys?
No, I wouldn't classify it as any more or any less, because I think it's always about the same. And again, because we aren't comfortable with a player's character or their medical, other teams might be. So it usually balances out. And like I said earlier, for every guy we probably didn't think we were going to cross off, we probably added a guy back that once we did some more research, we felt more comfortable with him.
Last year, I know you said it was an organizational decision to get younger quarterback. Was there any such talks with the defense in general 3-4 years ago? Because you've gotten significantly younger at that position or that part of the ball since 2011.
Yeah, I think football nature took over there, and those decisions were made for us as we went through, players decline. It happens to the greatest of them, and I think that happens over time. Sometimes those declining players have escalating salaries, and that forces you to do some of those things. So I don't think, you know, with the quarterback situation, we had always had Ben and Charlie and Byron. It was an older group, and you wanted to be able to add a young player into that mix as we try to do at all positions. And that's what we'll do with this draft. I don't think we can sit here and say that there's an impact guy that's going to come in and be a starter. I think they'll come in and they'll certainly be able to compete and maybe to contribute in some of the sub packages the coach talks about, and they'll continue to develop. And depending on how mature they are and how smart they are and how emotionally ready for that, I think that'll determine how quick they contribute to us more than their talent. They're all talented, but as Coach alluded to earlier, there's still going to have to be some growing that's going to have to happen. So I think that all coincides with the decline. You want to have the young guys stacked to be able to replace them.
What's the process this week? Is it basically rechecking medical, crossing T's, dotting I's, and is the draft board pretty much set?
It is, and then, you know, we'll fine-tune last-minute checks, make sure there's a ton of data that we go through in this process, from heights and weights and speeds, medical data, statistics. There's always character issues that will occur right up until draft day. We hold our fingers crossed that, you know, nobody gets themselves in trouble before draft day, but history has told us that could happen. So it's never over until it's over, and it's a. But for the most part, yes, everything is lined up. We'll fine tune the process and go through our own mock scenarios over the next couple days.
Kevin, do you feel because this draft is maybe deeper in terms of overall talent at the top, there'll be more or less trades with people targeting guys to move up or move back?
I'm guessing less. I said that every year, and every year I get proved wrong because we're like, uh-oh, someone's trading up. And we'll be prepared for that. But it won't change what we're going to do. We'll sit there at 15 and wait for 14 other teams to do what they're going to do. Either they're trading up or they're picking, because we can't move unless we flush out. But we won't. We're not going to flush out prior to knowing what's available to us at 15. I'll certainly say that, because you never trade away until you know what you're trading away from as well. I really believe the quarterbacks are the one position that teams may jockey for. Especially if they don't get picked high, I expect a lot of action in the bottom of the first, maybe after we pick, for teams trying to get back up to get a quarterback that they passed on.
Where do you think the delineation is? I know in years past you'd say, hey, there's 12 guys in this draft that are, you know, star capable. Where's that delineation this year?
Honestly, we entered this thing and, you know, at first we were like, boy, there's probably 13, 15 guys. We're going to be good. This is good. This is really working out good. Afterwards, I'm saying it's like there's like 19 guys that you could say, wow, we'd really feel good about getting them at 15.
Mike, I think you have three going out and one coming in on the D-line, at least where you are now. How is that positioned in terms of what it will need to be for you? You have the draft. You have maybe subsequent free agency.
I think it's just that. Obviously, we're not done in that area. But also – mentioned that we got some young people here that are working, and we don't expect them to be the same as they have been. We expect improvement in some of the young people working here, like Armfield and Nick Williams. But obviously, it's incomplete. We've lost more than we've added, and hopefully this weekend and beyond, we'll rectify that.
And would linebacker inside be undetermined but more complete? Do you have more viable candidates there?
We haven't lost anyone there, if that's what you mean, relative to what we played with last year. So, yeah, you can say that.
The Mike Adams case got resolved this week. Did anything that happened over the past 2 weeks impact his standing within the organization?
No.
I'll say one thing. I'm just glad Mike Adams is a Steeler.
Anything else? All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.